Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Tuesday afternoon program on WGXC ACRA 90.7. And I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson. I am thrilled to have in the studio with me Doreen Davis, who's the supervisor for the town of Catskill. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for making time in your busy schedule to come in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's do a little bit of personal bio stuff. Born in Schenectady. How many times can I say that wrong?
Schenectady.
Tell me about your family. Are you an only child?
I am not. I am the middle child of five. Yes.
Five.
Uh-huh. Wow. I have two brothers and three sisters.
And mom and dad, what were they like?
Or two sisters. Mom and dad grew up in Troy and Cohoes, a little north of here. And dad was an A&P manager for many years. And then started his own business, bought a summer resort, moved us all there. And we lived there for close to 20 years.
Wow.
And mom ran it when he was on the road because he needed two or three jobs to make it all work.
And you, I bet you were put to work kind of early doing chores.
If your nose could hit the counter where you were waiting on people, that was pretty much when we started.
That's exciting. Did you have kind of a friendly relationship with your siblings?
Yes.
Yeah. Real close?
Everybody's really close. We're spread out. One is in Texas, one in New Jersey. But growing up, we were tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you get a feeling as a girl, being a child, that somehow that was different than being a boy? Were there different expectations?
Oh, absolutely. In the 50s and 60s, I think that was a given. But particularly in my instance, it was kind of interesting as my dad was thinking about selling the summer resort. Mm. Both of my brothers were went off to become doctors in their future. And there was never any thought that anybody else in the family might be interested in taking it over. And from a business perspective, it was probably maybe me. But that there's great stories of I always wanted to paint the fences and the boats, but those were guy things.
Mm.
So, yeah, a little bit, but we've gotten through that. Mm-hmm.
And so in what way did they make you feel special?
Oh, I think they did everything they could for us. They gave us every opportunity. Each one of us had an opportunity. Actually, I'll give you a classic example. When we worked at the pavilion in the store in the summers, you would think, well, your family, so you stay on forever. And we had schedules just like the people that they hired from the outside. They were very respectful of us. They encouraged focus on education, extracurricular activities. I think we all ended up well-rounded as a result.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents read to you?
Yes.
When you were little?
Little.
Yeah.
Not in the summer because we were all too
busy. Right.
But yeah, books were, and we lived outside of the town of Cambridge in upstate New York. There weren't a lot of activities. You were out, and so reading, you would bring home three or four books from the library, and you know, that was what you did most evenings.
So you graduated from Cambridge Central School. That's the high school, I take it, yes?
I did.
What were your interests?
That was the whole school.
That was the whole
12.
School.
That was it.
All right. What were your interests in the high school level? What were you drawn to?
I was in American history, political science.
Mm.
I had some great teachers that, as I look back, I think they generated the interest, is what often happens in school.
It is often the case. There's one teacher that somehow you make a connection with,
exactly,
and it illuminates the whole field of discovery.
Would that
students.
It had been math. It was not, unfortunately.
So was there a period in history that you were drawn to that you liked?
It was more modern U.S.
20th century.
I did. I think in when I went to college, I continued and I did most of my work in, you know, in papers and things like that in the 40s and 50s.
Mm.
So that whole period, and went to school in 69 to 73. So it was pretty intense time in terms of history in the U.S.
Yeah. Where did you go to school?
I went to Catholic University of America in D.C.
Studying history and politics?
History and poli-sci. Secondary education as a major. But there weren't any jobs when I got out, so that's how I ended up going different paths.
So I have you down. Yeah, 1976, you worked in the pharmaceutical industry for 32 years.
32 years.
So how did you get drawn into that?
I was working part-time when I couldn't find a teaching job. I was working at the
you
local
wanted to
pharmacy.
Teach.
I did.
At what level? What were you thinking
of? High school.
Yeah, that's great.
High school. And there just weren't any jobs.
Mm.
It was a very interesting time. Schools hadn't really started to expand. Teaching was a deferment during the Vietnam War.
Oh, yes.
So for a lot of different reasons, again, a strong work background in my family. I came home from college in a Christmas vacation. My mother had found me a job, and it was at the pharmacy. And I stayed there. And,
really? Your mom found you this job?
Yes. We were all well employed. but it was a place where I learned a lot. They took advantage of the fact that I was in school and learning. So it was not just – they did have a soda fountain up front, which was where I first started scooping ice cream. The old pharmacies that had the marble counters and the like.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I raised my son in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And we had that – pharmacy with the counter, and every Saturday morning we were there.
Yeah.
And it was really one of the ways that you belonged to your community.
It was.
It was terrific.
Yeah. And you learned everything about the community within the first hour of the day because they would all come in and buy their newspapers.
Yes, of course. We had that. And then on Tuesday nights, we went to the public library for the kids' reading hour.
Yeah.
And that was the other episode of our weekly life that we felt like we truly belonged to where we lived. It was wonderful.
Great.
The libraries continue to be an amazing hub of a community.
Agreed.
And actually, isn't it amazing how libraries in the last 20 years have really reinvented themselves?
They really have. Yeah. Yeah.
You can remember when the internet came out, like, oh, libraries, books, everything's over.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, voila.
Yep. Now we're the center.
We are the center. And I have to commend Sue and the staff here. It's a fantastic library in Catskill.
And we just spoke about the one in Palinville also, which is another neat little gem in the middle of town.
Yeah. And the new library, relatively new library, I guess they're about to celebrate their first anniversary of their new space.
Yep.
It is really, really something. So what was difficult about being in the pharmaceutical world?
I was one of the first probably two or three women ever.
Oh.
So it was a role in which physicians, learned from us. It didn't have the connotation that it does today.
What does it have today? What does
it
mean?
It's viewed as outright promotion and you're influencing physician choice, et cetera. There wasn't that many things to choose from then. So you were basically just telling them about the one thing that was available for that disease. Now there's bidding and cost and all the issues that we all know are challenging in this environment.
And the lobbying,
all of it.
So you didn't have to do that.
No. And I worked in a small geography, but there was literally no women. And as I moved up the ranks based on performance, it was, well, could you manage men? So it was that era.
It's so funny knowing you now and what a great dynamic personality you have. It seems so funny that that would even be a question.
It was a serious question.
Of course,
said with great sincerity and they were really concerned.
Well, how was that? Was there problems?
No. Leadership is leadership. I think it's gender neutral if you do it well.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't find it to be that much of a challenge. But I will tell you a funny story is that the first year I was employed, I won the best thing award type of thing. And it was a trip and you got to bring your spouse, and I didn't have a spouse. So I asked them if I could bring my brother, who at the time was a freshman or a sophomore in med school. And they said no.
Because?
At the time, I don't think I was of the, oomph to ask why.
Uh-huh.
You were very early, and if they said no, then you said okay. And
so you went by yourself?
And
where'd you go?
Las Vegas.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
You went to Las Vegas, and you're like 18 or 19?
I was 26 or 27, but still painful. But I had, I had wives of colleagues who would come up and say, you're taking this job away from a man who has to support a family. It was early years, and it's interesting. I think the feminists of today, of the younger generation, I don't know if you'll ever really quite understand how interesting it was in those days.
Mm-hmm. So what did you like about it?
I loved it was selling, but it was selling at a level that was intellectually challenging.
Mm.
So from that perspective, it was very interesting. There were infrastructures around hospitals, around, how do you make, how does science contribute? So I had the opportunity with Merck to work on the HIV and AIDS drugs when people were literally the alternative was a death sentence, and had an opportunity to be involved with the protease inhibitors. Knew the activists that were so frustrated with the scientific community at the time. Merck kind of stepped up and said, here's everything we have. Tell us how we can do it better. And it was a fascinating experience. I don't know if I ever did anything else after that I didn't feel as strongly about as I did then.
Mm.
So lots of fun. Challenging.
So you stayed with, you retired in 2008 as a vice president.
I did.
That's very impressive.
Thank you.
In 1984, you purchased a home in Palenville.
We did. Well, my husband did. I didn't know him at the time, but it was his. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He was from the city. And
and so where were you living prior to that?
I was in the home in New Jersey, Pennsylvania area. Okay. I had done a stint in Richmond, Virginia, kind of moving through the ranks. You move mm-hmm. a lot. So mm-hmm. I was mostly in Pennsylvania before I came here.
So in my notes, I have in 1996, you had a weekly commute to Pennsylvania. And that's why?
Yes, because I married my husband and he had a daughter and she lived in the city. So he spent part of his time in New York City and we spent part of our time up here and then we put it all together.
So you met your current husband, Crane, mm-hmm. in 1992?
Yes.
So I understand there might be a little funny little anecdote about this.
God love us. Most listeners who know me know this story, which was that when I met him, he was in a consultant capacity. Mm-hmm. I was in a leadership role, and we ended up on opposite sides of the discussion, and
oh my.
I was the client. So I got to fire the vendor, and I fired him. but in actuality, we ended up working together, and actually were very successful for several years. Mm-hmm. But then, as all things happen in corporations, we kind of had to go our separate ways so that he could continue to thrive, as could I.
So in 2008... looking at your resume, you began to do a lot of politically oriented volunteer work. And, mm-hmm. I, and by that, I mean a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Yeah.
So what motivated you? Why were you intrigued with this?
I knew for about 6 months to a year that I would be retiring. And it was right at the height of the 2008 elections, which was President Obama's first term. Mm-hmm. It was clear that Pennsylvania was a swing state at the time.
And you were a field supervisor for the Obama campaign?
So when I knew I was retiring, they were offering some incredible training at the ground level. Mm. And I went to Harlem, actually, for a two-day training in which they would train field folks and then put them where they
needed.
Were needed
yeah.
if you had the flexibility of where you were willing to go. So I trained up in New York. Obviously, New York being a blue state, the opportunity was battleground in Pennsylvania. And the interesting thing about Pennsylvania is that I had lived there. So I retired, but I didn't really come home. That 13-and-a-half-year commute, I moved into the basement of my friend's house, a colleague mm-hmm. at Merck, mm-hmm. and had the opportunity to work with some great people in the field office in Montgomery County, which was mm-hmm. at that year. That's the suburbs of Philadelphia, so it was a do-or-die county.
Mm. Did you feel that kind of excitement and connection of, like, it's just the thing that, I don't know how to describe it, that thing that politics provides?
Yeah,
some people get, just happens, and you're, like, so excited about it.
There's a...
It's an obsession, almost, in some ways.
It is, because it is a do-or-die, you know, 18-hour days.
Intensity.
It was very similar to a couple of assignments I had at Merck, where I met my husband, where you would work all day and all night, and for a really, you know, short, intense period of time. And then when it was over, you kind of looked around and went, oh, gosh, now I have to go back to, like, getting my dry cleaning and things
right,
like that.
Right,
but, yeah, it was intense. It had a group of people across the political spectrum, frankly, that were looking for change. As much as you think of a corporation as being perhaps not as inclined, mm-hmm. the amount of people that don't discuss politics or religion in the business environment, because, frankly, it's not productive. But there was an awful lot of people that felt very strongly about an opportunity to get behind mm-hmm. that change that we were about to experience in 08.
So Obama won.
He did.
In 2008. In 2009, you went to be a campaign manager for Liz Simonson.
That was my first. I packed up, came home. Liz was someone that we knew personally, and she
in
said,
Woodstock.
She's
yes.
in Woodstock. She said, "I think I'm going to run for town supervisor."
Mm.
And she said, "I think I need somebody to manage my campaign." And I did. And she lost. But it was a good experience. Woodstock's mm-hmm. politics is a blood sport. They feel very passionately. And many of them are the same party, but they still feel very passionately and disagree on a lot of issues. So it was very interesting.
So you learned a lot.
Good education.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You're elected Catskill Town Supervisor, started in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really interesting story. You won by 8 votes?
That is correct.
So tell us about that. Tell us about that and what you found when you got there.
I think that the first thing to know is that one of the things that I had responsibility for was also the Democratic Committee in mm-hmm. Greene County. And the thing that struck me the most and that was the most frustrating was we couldn't find candidates. Mm. And I was a big believer, as many of the folks that have done great work in working over the years to try and bring this, is a two-party system, that good government requires choice.
Mm-hmm. And a dialogue.
And frankly, for a very, very long time, even though people heroically tried, there was a lot of vacancies where people would run unopposed. So that means no dialogue, because you really don't have to. Even if you mean well, you don't. Mm-hmm. You just don't feel it.
Sure.
So here we were in the largest town in the county, and we were about to run the race unopposed. Mm. So I sat in the back of the room at a town meeting, and I sent a text to a friend of mine. I said, could I do this? And they said 100% yes. And I thought it would just give the choice and the dialogue. Mm-hmm. And here we are, the eight votes. I was up by 27 the day that the election was held. And then we opened up all the absentee ballots, which is a pretty dramatic experience.
Yeah, of course.
And I had won by eight. 2 days after that, there was a discussion of, could you come in and talk to us? And I thought,
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And there was, through no, and I want to make sure I'm very clear on this, this was not malfeasance in any way, mm-hmm. but there was a period of time after the cement plants closed, tax revenue was declining, that there really hadn't been probably the appropriate planning around spending. And budget planning.
So you found 37,000 in reserves.
We couldn't make payroll. There was a question of whether we could make. We did make payroll, but we pushed the retirement system payment, which was about $300,000, into the next year, into February, which incurs a slight penalty, not critical, but you don't want to have to do that if you can.
And no line item budget?
None. Software that was appropriate, but not the level of, particularly when you've got nothing but property taxes on the shoulders of your taxpayers, not the degree of acuity that you probably would prefer. So we spent the first 6 months with the assistance of a very good consultant and our accounting firm that is contracted with the municipality, just basically rebuilding that budget from the bottom up so that we understood what we had. And there was, surprises as you went along and some changes in what was the best use of our resources. Because I think if there's anything that your voter deserves, it's, if I'm going to pay you taxes, help me understand whether it's going to the right thing. And you can disagree about what the right thing is.
Right. But transparency
but
and
you
accountability.
You got to be able to articulate it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you're using QuickBooks.
Yeah.
And using a real-time financial
software
program.
Oh, my gosh. You can look at it. Everybody loves it now. Everybody was scared to death of it.
Of course.
Because change is challenging.
Sure.
You can, at any given time, you can press a button and you can see what we wrote for that day. Consolidated all our accounts. Just good business practices. Mm-hmm. Nothing complex.
So I have a note here that says, as a result, we were able to validate our actual fund balance, which was much healthier than expected.
It was. $804,000.
In the general.
Yeah.
And a fund of approximately $500,000 in the highway fund.
In highway, yeah. So what that frees us up to do is, number one, understand where we're at. But now you can start actually planning as opposed to being reactive, which is, if you don't look 5 years down the road, then most times you are reacting. And it's not that you don't redo. The famous discussion in business is you do a five-year plan, but you redo it every year because something changes.
But you have to have a five-year plan.
You have to have a five-year plan, and you have to have a theory of what you'd like to focus on.
Mm-hmm. So in our exchange, our communication, there were kind of three primary, I think, areas that you wanted, or I wanted to talk with you about, that you agreed on, that were pretty non-political in nature. The first was fiscal integrity. Mm-hmm. The second was economic development. Mm-hmm. And the third was employees treated with respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. And so that has been kind of a guidelines for you and what you're trying to bring to your responsibilities.
Yeah.
Let's talk about economic development. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, let's talk about employee respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. What have you changed? What is... How has that been improved?
You know, whenever you have a change in leadership at any level mm-hmm. or a change in personnel, there's the opportunity to start with a clean slate. So I never make judgments based on anything other than observed behavior, because if you don't, then you're listening to somebody else's point of view through a filter. So there was tension. Mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm.
Anxiety, perhaps?
Yeah, probably, because we were shrinking. Everyone knew that the, you know, again, our revenue base was drying up, mm-hmm. And that was going to, you know, be challenging in some areas. And we have some fairly significant, you know, your highway department, as much as everybody says, oh, you must be able to save money there. Well, you know, we just went through a snowstorm that, you know, the first thing you do is thank your highway department for all the miles of roads that those guys plowed over that period of time.
Yeah, right. And that's an expensive proposition,
too. No matter what it is, they are big trucks that need to work well. Mm-hmm. And when somebody invites me to something as the supervisor about something structural or you know, anything to do with mechanics, mm-hmm. and I just look at them and go, you know, I mean, I can run your budget, but man, if you're asking me whether I think we should have that truck, I'm going to turn to the folks that I work with mm-hmm. that are very both on the board and also mm-hmm. in the highway department. The other thing is we have an ambulance service, which services both the village and the town. And so, you know, you really want to make sure.
What's the annual budget for that?
About $1.7 million.
And that comes from both
that's
town
from
and
tax,
village
and,
taxes?
Yes, and revenue. So you've got to remember that's a billable expense through Medicare, Medicaid, uh-huh. and the like.
Right.
But it's a huge expense.
Sure.
But, you know, you choose what you want to invest. Again, if you're going to, you know, where's your tax dollar and how's it going to work? Mm-hmm. So the employee piece was about just in any other organization that I've ever managed people, as you sit down, you listen. What do you like about what you're doing? You know, if you could change one thing, what would it be? And mm-hmm. just even having that open conversation mm-hmm. that says I'm willing to learn.
Mm-hmm. And it's participatory in a genuine way.
And it can change a tone in a heartbeat. So, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I think everybody is feeling good. And mm-hmm. I did a lot of rebuilding in my, you know, professional life. And mm-hmm. anytime you go in, that's the first thing you ask.
Do you think, without pointing fingers, do you think there was some resistance that you were a woman coming in to be town supervisor?
I don't think so.
I
don't think there probably haven't had a lot of experience working with women in mm-hmm. leadership roles just mm-hmm. because there's not a lot of opportunity here. There's a lot of entrepreneurial businesses run by great women.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's just not a broad swath of experience in this environment. So it probably was different. There's never been a female supervisor. I think mm-hmm. one of my favorite anecdotes from when I was first breaking into the pharmaceutical industry was calling on a very successful pharmacy in Albany and having the guy look to me and he said, this is after about a year, he said, you know, I really like working with you. I said, really? That's great. And he was a, you know, curmudgeonly type of older guy. I said, really? I said, why do you think that is? He said, I think it's because you work like a man. So,
what does that mean? Is it code for something hardworking, dedicated, smart? What does that mean?
I think at the time he didn't know what he meant,
yeah,
but he didn't feel uncomfortable with me.
He didn't feel threatened by you.
Exactly. And all those words that you've heard from, you know, experiences where you've heard successful women sometimes are held to different standards and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I genuinely have not felt that a day that I've been in this role. But I've also been a woman in leadership roles
for a long time.
A long time. Yeah. So,
okay. So you win the election by 8 votes.
Uh-huh.
You get called into this meeting and they obviously showed you the financial situation.
Yeah.
You went home and went, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into?
A little bit.
What were your initial fears, anxiety? What were you concerned with?
You take a breath. The thing that bothered me a little bit was, I mean, I've done budgets three times the size of the town budget, but there's...
Which is how much?
Town budget is about $6 million.
$6 million, okay.
Yeah. But the difference is there are certain idiosyncrasies around municipal accounting and fund balances and where you can move money and where you can't move money so that you don't know what you don't know is one of my favorite sayings. And I didn't. But I immediately reached into the controller's office and they have some extraordinary people there. They have some great training. And we took it a step at a time. I had a couple of really good consultants who had finance background, who actually were my human resources and HR folks and labor folks that would help a community. They work in local towns, and they all helped us. which I think was a big win for us. So the first 3 months to 6 months was hard. I you know, these are part-time jobs, but it was a 40-plus hour week type of exercise just to make sure.
Let me make just a little break
And
remind people that you're listening to WGXC 90.7 ACRA, and we are visiting with Doreen Davis, supervisor for the town of Catskill. Thank you for being here.
Thank
Doreen.
You.
It's a very interesting conversation for me. So what are the current projects and challenges for the town of Catskill right now?
So, you know, it was interesting. I think when you looked at those three things I spoke about, financial integrity, taking care of the employees, and economic development, mm-hmm. I've always had like a one-year runway on those things. And the financial piece...
A one-year runway means that you've had
time
to plan accordingly.
Assess, decide what your actions are, consult with the board. And we've had a very collaborative board. Mm-hmm. Well, first thing, priority was the financial piece of it. And just
that
to make sure
immediate.
That we knew what we had.
Right.
We also had the opportunity. There is something called a landfill that has been closed in the community. It served five towns.
Was that a money-making opportunity?
It wasn't a money-making opportunity, but it was it had been closed, and there was a requirement to put a certain amount of money away to ensure that it was monitored and managed appropriately. That fund grew. So it had been there. It sunsets in 2022. We had the opportunity to take some funds from that account as long as all other communities were in agreement. No one's turning down money. We knew we wouldn't need that much money to manage it. It had, you know, had a track record of almost 15 years.
This is around environmental concerns primarily,
yes.
I would assume?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Sure.
All right.
And so there's a standard process where they shut it down and then you monitor it. Mm-hmm. So right now the planned sunset is 2022, but the DEC could come in and say, we want you to extend your monitoring for another 10 years or something like that. But there was money there. So that was an opportunity for us, which is why our balance now looks healthy. We took that fund.
Is that a borrowing, or can you actually just take it?
No, it's yours.
It's yours.
It's yours. You paid in. It comes back.
Christmas.
Isn't it amazing? Yeah. So that was something that the previous board had been looking at, and we were able to execute that. So we had a breather in terms of our ability to manage the financial piece. So now it was the economic development, because the sole issues is number one, jobs for the individuals, but number two, some sort of financial revenue that isn't just on the backs of the property owners of the community. So business is important. And
are we talking about retail and services or both?
Light industry, retail, it should be a mix.
Right.
You know, if you're doing something correctly.
Are we out of balance, in your opinion? I mean, I know there's always an ongoing discussion between nonprofits, which don't pay property taxes, and then a for-profit enterprise.
Well, you look at what you had, right? Mm-hmm. So you had three cement plants at one time that employed hundreds of people and paid taxes. Declined over the last 5 years, so that they were down. They were paying a certain percentage of what they had been when they were open, but when they moved, which they did.
Why did they move?
They moved to, I believe, Latin America, if I'm not, South America potentially. They really moved. Now, I was down in Pennsylvania during this time, but they left the area. So there was no, you know, those jobs just left. You need a mix. Nobody tells you what the mix is. I mean, you can go out and commission a $200,000 analysis of all of this, but your money is better spent, you know, looking at what you have. And we have some opportunities. Right now, yeah. The Exit 21 corridor is what I call our crown jewel.
Mm-hmm. Is this where there's a potential water park?
That's one of the options, but no, you know, there's no specific water park that has reached into us and said, we'd like to sit down and talk to you. That's going to be a prime land, a prime piece of land that the IDA has now consolidated, and are working closely with us. We have a very good relationship with the IDA, and we have a lot of respect for.
And the IDA is?
The Industrial Development Agency.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's it, county.
It's countywide. They have the opportunity to invest in areas.
And they're excited about it.
Yeah, because it's right off the thruway.
Right.
There is great need for a hotel at that site. So we are actively working to Resolve.
A hotel with a small conference center?
Potentially.
Yeah.
That's what we're thinking of.
That's the goal.
We're working with the county on this because mm-hmm. of the IDA. Mm-hmm. And there's a defunct hotel that is there now that the county has assumed responsibility. So mm-hmm. that's another opportunity to work collaboratively with the county on mm-hmm. some of these initiatives, mm-hmm. which I'm a big fan of. If somebody else has invented the wheel, I have no interest in reinventing it.
Of course.
So there's they have affected the consolidation of that property, and it's now open for business. So that mm-hmm. means attracting development.
Do you spend time as the town supervisor cultivating potential clients
yeah.
or people?
And that's what I had said when I ran was that, you know, you gotta get dressed up and you gotta go out, right? You gotta get suited up and you gotta go.
And you've done that?
Yeah.
And you continue to do that?
Because if there are opportunities anywhere, and which ones have the biggest return on the dollar, right. which ones can the IDA invest in?
And what has sustainability?
And what has sustainability and what's the appropriate mix? And it's gotta pass all the existing zoning and planning board requirements that we have as a community.
Mm-hmm,
and if there's a special use involved, then you've got to go through all the public hearing exercise.
Mm-hmm. And that's town, not village, correct?
Both have that exercise, but that area is the town.
Okay.
So then the other thing that we built in with that was the sewer project, which had been developing over the years with other supervisors before me. I just happened to be the one where the shovel was in the ground at the time. But
so let's talk about that. What is that? What is the sewer project?
So the sewer project is if you go out where the old hospital was and head all the way out to Leeds, that is an area that has not had sewer. So you in the village have water
mm-hmm.
and you have sewer.
Yes. And we pay for it.
And you pay for it.
With our taxes.
Let's take the opposite of that, which is my house in Palinville, right? I have a well and I have a septic tank and I will have that for the foreseeable future.
Right.
Through my lifetime and my offsprings. But here's an area that was living literally right next to the village. And there had been some environmental concerns out in Leeds, which actually put them in a position of needing to be monitored and to take corrective action.
In terms of well water and
seepage into wrong places,
et cetera.
So, and there are businesses out there that are trying to do business. And they're under, you know, some of this burden. So
it's in everybody's best interest.
It's in everybody's best interest, as disruptive as it is. Mm-hmm. And I do not underestimate at all how miserable it is to have these folks laying pipe in your front lawn. Mm-hmm. But that is a $12 million project. We just received an additional $3 million from the Environmental Facilities Corporation. These were all state funds.
Mm-hmm. And that you wrote a grant for and then obtained it?
And our engineering firm that is running the sewer project found another opportunity for an additional $3 million. So it's now down to $9 million. It is through Jefferson now. It will finish up in Leeds this summer.
So this is a go.
It's happening.
Okay.
It's absolutely happening. Now, what that does for you is the IDA, the town, and the sewer project sat down in a room, and this was an opportunity to bring some skill sets to the table, which was if we're only going up to but not to the thruway exit, what does that do to our development? So with some...
How does it hinder it?
Well, it would help it if you ran it out there.
Yeah, right. And it makes an attractive element to a bargaining chip for potential
anybody who's
tenants.
Coming in and you say to them you have full sewer and natural gas, and that's when we brought Central Hudson to the table. The IDA made the investment of the additional funding it would take to run, and the pipes have to be a different size. I know more about pipes than I did before. But that's the kind of stuff that you really have to. So from an economic development perspective, those are the types of things that you have to take advantage of.
So what else, other than the Exit 21 development, where else in town? What are you looking at?
The other opportunities are potentially if we can find somebody that's interested to come in. And as of now, that has not happened. So Exit 21 has been where our focus is.
Mm-hmm.
A new hotel is the priority. Palinville, we're putting sidewalks in. That was a grant before my time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an area that because of the interest in the falls, Palinville is usually where people at least drive through.
Right.
People are trying to figure out a way to take the traffic burden off where the Catterskill Falls is. And for those of us that know that twist. So there's some shuttle interest between the town of Hunter and Palinville. If we could figure out a way to make that a viable, you know, you come up, you park. Get to Palinville, park somewhere.
Right.
And the sidewalks are a part of that discussion. So because right now you're walking along the side of 23A, and that's a
dangerous.
You know, dangerous.
Yeah.
So the
Now the library has a nice parking lot.
They do. They do.
Not paved.
Not paved,
but,
but it's
a
nice lot. And there's some other areas. So everybody's working on this. And I think that that is the type of things, hamlet by hamlet, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Leeds, so we've just mentioned, has the sewer upgrade. Palinville, we're working on the sidewalks. They have their bicentennial coming, by the way, the weekend of July 14th.
Ah.
I'm a native, so I want to say good things about Palinville.
Of course.
But, you know, you have to work with each of the communities to see what they need,
mm-hmm.
Because there's no one-size-fits-all on some of this. So the question will be, what other opportunities are there, particularly up along that corridor? The hospital is expanding and doing good things in terms of that footprint.
In Jefferson Heights?
In Jefferson Heights.
Right?
So many of, you know, anybody who's been here for a long time knows we had our own hospital. And then about 10 years ago, that moved over in a consolidation. Great debate as to whether that was the right thing to do, but it's happened. So now what do we do with that building? And they've been a great partner in putting more of their ambulatory care back on this side of the river. Everybody says, well, you know, will they ever move the hospital back here? And the answer is probably not, based on my experience in consolidation in hospital system. But they are now the number one employer in the county.
Oh, really? The hospital
the
is?
The hospital is. Now, seasonal employer, obviously, in the resorts and places like that. But they have a significant presence here, and they want to be a good partner. So I think it's important for us to always keep our ear to the ground with them. And actually, they're the guy that has point responsibility for this side of the river actually lives here, and I think that's a great plus, too.
Yes. So in looking at just specifically the village of Catskill, what would you like to see change in the village? What does the village need? We've had this ongoing series about envisioning a village, and so people have had various ideas about what would...
I mean, I think the you know, like the crown jewel for the town, from my perspective, is Exit 21, right? I mean, to me, we get that right. Everything flows from it. It's not pretty, not particularly sexy, but it is our, you know, it will be our future. From the village's perspective, I think the waterfront is obviously, and the arts are very, very important. That means being supportive of all of those things and still managing the budget, and that's hard. And I've been in great dinner conversations with folks about what does that mean.
So you're specifically referencing nonprofit art activities that doesn't pay property taxes versus...
The challenge of taking something off the rolls and how do you fill it doesn't mean it isn't the right thing to do.
Sure.
But the question is, what is the backfill?
How do you find
that?
The balance? I mean, everyone, the other side of that argument, of course, that we know is the arts creates a cultural environment which invites people and fosters interest into a town and want to live there.
Yep.
So they
it's just that the equation isn't there. You know, the math doesn't work on that.
Yeah,
and that's the only piece. So it doesn't, it encourages restaurants. You're absolutely right. It encourages property purchase. But it's that math that you do at the end of the year that says X divided into Y. Absolutely a long-term investment, but that's why I'm a big fan of mix. So
now,
it may be the town's responsibility.
Too. We have over 100 nonprofit properties, right?
Absolutely.
And we have a lot of churches.
Absolutely.
And, you know, not non-art
nonprofit. It's not just, you're absolutely right. No, you're absolutely
right. Is there a chance of a boutique hotel coming into the village area?
It would depend on the private sector.
Yeah.
I would think it would be brilliant if somebody wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the challenge we have is the transport side of the river. We're on the wrong side of the river terms of the Amtrak. That's not wrong. The beautiful thing would be for Metro North to come up all the way to Kingston. Now you're, you know, 18 miles away, at least from the Ulster Green border. But that, you know, is something that everybody should be mindful of.
Yes, that would be great.
That would be a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, if rail continues to get the attention it's getting, it would be interesting to see if anybody wanted to make that investment.
Speaking of transportation, our little barge incident last week.
Yes.
How have they discovered what was the cause? Is it just poor driving? is it as simple as the driver didn't know what he was doing? What's going on?
I don't think anybody should speculate on what it could be. What I have taken to heart, because one of my deputy supervisor is a member of the fire department in a leadership role, Patrick McCulloch. I was up in Albany when that happened and got a text, you know, as to the importance and what had been taking place. Just the dodging of a bullet was significant.
Well, they kudos to the staff and crew here that seem to be. And Vinny came in and did a special report for us, but they seem to be on it instantly.
They are
instantly. No, it was very impressive.
There is nothing that you can say but good things about all of our levels of first responder, which is why it's our responsibility in government, particularly with so many of these people that are volunteers, to stand up and say, So. Everybody has stood up and said, up to and including the governor to find out what has happened with that. I also have a future son-in-law who is at SUNY Maritime. So I will share with you off air some of his idle speculations about that as a sophomore at SUNY Maritime. But yeah, no, that's important. We got a lot of rail coming through here, too. We met with CSX the other day and had a very good meeting about what's coming through, and they're doubling some of their tracks and you know, what percentage of their rail freight is risky versus what they call intermodal, which is just basically everything that gets shipped to the Amazon and, and you know, big old cars that they fill with goods. But it's, you know, it comes through here a lot. So that's an important thing to keep an eye on, too.
What are some ways that the town and the village could be working more closely?
So I think it remains unexplored. My first year, as we said, was doing, you know, I focus on give myself a certain list, and I only I don't stray, because then I get you dilute your effort.
But that was around financial stability.
And I think that the board now is looking at where our opportunities are. There's always great debate about shared services, intermunicipal agreements, and consolidation. The governor is encouraging it. There are some places where it makes sense. There are probably other places that it doesn't make sense.
Can you give us an example of each?
Right now we're working, we're taking a look at code. We got a grant from the governor that just said, give me something. I wanted to look at something. The village agreed to take a look at it. Now that we're in the weeds, we're not sure. Because there's different zoning, there's different planning. But we should look at every department that we have and just with no bias.
Or preconceived idea.
But you'll get rewarded for some of this. But on the other hand, you know, we're not like all of these small counties upstate have grown in different ways, organically, you know, so to speak, in terms of managing what they felt they needed to manage. There's very little consistency across a lot of these areas. And what you look for in consolidation is, can you find consistencies or make them whenever you redesign a department. And we have to get through that, I think, in a couple of places. I like the idea of just being able to pick up the phone and work together. You know, things like the fireworks, things like Halloween, things, you know. So, you know, the ability had, I've worked well with everyone that's been there because I have a big thing about, and the election is just over, so I can say it now. And in November, once the campaign is over, then you got to govern.
You just got to roll up your sleeves and get to work.
You got to govern. And governing is different than campaigning. I wish at other levels of government there was an awareness of that. But at the local level, you can really make that work.
Okay. So one final question. 5 years. How's the town of Catskill going to look different than it is now?
I believe the town of Catskill will have a upper level, mid-tier hotel that will be attractive to business people who are working, who are going to park their car, and they're going to say, gosh, I'd really like to go to dinner somewhere tonight. And they're going to go up online, as everyone does, and they're going to pick a really nice restaurant in Catskill, and they're going to enjoy themselves. Or they're going to say, you know, I think I want to come up there on a Thursday night, and I'll do my meetings from my hotel, and maybe I'll stay through Monday. And I believe that, that Exit 21 will have the opportunity to provide that. I think the dance and the arts that we have is, are going to be up and running and blossoming and doing nothing but growing.
What about real estate and affordable housing? Will we remain kind of the affordable version of the part of the valley?
I think for parts of it, it'll depend. I think whether we like it or not, Wall Street is providing some of that expendable income. Unfortunately, it's not spread widely. But as the markets go, the interest in this area, you know, Vinny will tell you, we got to 2007 and things were booming, and then 8 came and, yeah, you know, we got killed. Saugerties was the same way. Mm-hmm.
But you feel hopeful. You have a very positive view of
absolutely.
The future for us.
Absolutely. If other than the factors we can't control, right? So I usually draw a circle, and I put little X's inside the circle, which are the things that we can control. And then I make sure everybody understands there are things outside the circle that are outside of our control. Mm-hmm. How the state funds, how the federal funds. We are hugely dependent on that, and we're in a big sea change.
Yes, potentially.
On things that I don't think people understand, that if they do make the changes, that there's going to have some significant impact. Mm-hmm. So I have to keep an eye on that. That to me is something to, you know, be aware of.
So unfortunately, we're almost out of time. But in the next year, what are your priorities in the next 6 to 12 months?
We have several grants that we've received. So we got almost $1 million in grants just this year in terms of filling forms out and sending it in. They're process heavy, but they're worth the investment. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a bridge repair out on Pennsylvania Avenue in Palinville. Sidewalks will be done in Palinville. We believe that the hotel that is kind of looking ugly out there, that hopefully we'll have some resolution to that on exit 21 and can be looking. And I want everybody's lawn replanted and seeded in Jefferson Heights. That will be a good year if that happens.
All right.
Okay.
Good. Doreen, it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for
inviting
me.
Will you come back and visit
Absolutely.
On a regular basis?
Absolutely.
We'd love
to
stay in touch and certainly have your perspective.
Hopefully I won't
be
talking about sewers still, but...
there'll be plenty of future conversations, I think. So we're going to go out on a little Nina Simone.
Oh, lovely.